Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Marta McDonald.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. Dive in with us as we talk to the artists of the 2023 season
and get a behind-the-scenes peek at the seven fantastic shows happening this summer.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater.
Welcome back to the 2023 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral land of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples. We are in the MyFM studio, which looks out over the beautiful St. Lawrence River, surrounded by the Thousand Islands. My name is Marta McDonald.
And I'm Allison Hess. Thank you for joining us today as we dive into the third production of our 2023 season and the first show of the season that takes place in our Fire Hall Theater, Intimate Apparel.
Intimate Apparel is considered to be one of the best plays ever written from Pulitzer Prize-winning playwright Lynn Nottage. Inspired by the story of her real-life great-grandmother, Intimate Apparel follows Esther, a seamstress specializing in exquisite corsets as she navigates relationships, love, and her future.
This is a great production for our Fire Hall Theater because it is a very intimate space compared to our Springer Theater. I think it's around like 100, 110 seats, something like that.
Approximately, depending on the configuration.
We are very lucky to have two members of the creative team with us in the studio today, director Lisa Karen Cox and set designer Sarah Uwadiai. Welcome.
Woo-hoo, happy to be here.
Hey, awesome. Woo-hoo, thank you so much for joining us today. This is both of your first production with the Thousand Islands Playhouse, yeah?
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. Happy to be here.
Amazing. Well, we'll give you a little bit of an intro. So our director, Lisa Karen Cox, as we said before, this is her TIP debut, but she has worked at various companies, Soul Pepper, working through with Obsidian Theater in partnership with CBC Gem, and she also has spent over a decade in performing arts working with the Toronto District School Board. She's an actor and a certified teacher, as well as an intimacy director and a faculty member at the Toronto Metropolitan University.
Yay.
Yeah. That's a lot. You're like, those are the things. It's weird, right? Seeing kind of your life like in a little paragraph like that, where you're like, oh, okay, great.
Very strange.
And for Sarah, also your TIP debut. And you just opened the Wedding Band, right, at Stratford, which is pretty exciting. So that was your second season at Stratford. And you've also worked at the Citadel, Theatre Calgary. But you're also a multidisciplinary artist, as well as a filmmaker, which is awesome. So I can't wait to dive into some of that as well. So thank you for joining us and speaking with us. And I don't know if I mentioned, Sarah is our set designer. So we have our director and our set designer here. And I'm sure our audience is very excited to kind of know how those things I think we all know what a director does, or at least I think we know what a director does. But I think a set designer and talking about that is going to be a really interesting thing today. So I'm excited.
All right, let's dive in. As it says in the title, Intimate Apparel is a production that features many intimate moments, both emotionally and physically. Lisa, you've worked, as I said, as an intimacy director in the past, and you've brought in an intimacy choreographer, Corey Tasmania, for this production. For those who might not know, can you tell us what it means to be an intimacy choreographer?
Sure. Intimacy, firstly, I would say, is a relatively new development in theater and film, and it's really about balancing power.
Yeah.
Ultimately, when the work we do as artists is deeply vulnerable and intimate work, particularly when it comes to physical intimacy, and sometimes you just want to make sure there's a balance of power so no power is abused. You know, for me as the director, the reason I brought an intimacy choreographer on, despite being one myself, is because as the director, I hold a lot of power in the room, and I want to ensure that all of the actors are doing things that they are comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to be in deeper dialogue, more honest dialogue with someone who's not the director,
totally.
So that ensures that they're doing things that they're comfortable with. The play, like right in the stage directions, I mean, it's called Intimate Apparel, let's be real.
Yeah.
So you're already talking about like underwear and undergarments as a starting place.
Vulnerability, yeah.
And physical vulnerability in terms of the material and the clothing and where that clothing is placed on the body. And then even further to that, the extreme emotional vulnerability is also deeply apparent in the play. But the intimacy choreographer specifically is brought in to choreograph those moments of physical intimacy to ensure that the actors feel safe.
Yeah, so it's not that the actors have to make choices in the moment that might make the other actor uncomfortable. It's like they're basically given choreography for the touching of each other, and
absolutely,
so that people feel super comfortable and they're not feeling like they have to make acting choices that involve physicality that could be quite vulnerable.
Exactly.
Right.
They're talked through the process quite extensively. Mm-hmm. We did over 8 hours of choreography work in the piece. So anything you see in the piece is really mapped out in great detail. It'll look like it's not because they're acting.
Wow.
Concept.
How do you find your experience as an intimacy director lends itself to the direction of intimate apparel as a whole? Like, because it is really so much about intimacy.
I mean, we talk about physical intimacy, but emotional intimacy, for me, especially the depth with which we go in this play, has to be mapped out equally as deeply. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the reality is the way you look at someone is intimate. The way you hold their hand is intimate. So it's imbued deeply in the play. And I would say also for one of our characters, for two of our characters, how they touch even material and fabric is also incredibly intimate.
Yes. Well, the stage direction, there's so much in that Lynn has written in that's like inferred motive that's not, that you have to sort of like, it's like she looks but then doesn't look. And you're like, okay, so I know what that means, but then the actor is going to have to just like really portray that because there is no dialogue involved. And so there's so much that's like said with an instant look in this
Absolutely.
Show.
The subtext is off
yes.
the hook
yes.
in this
yes.
one.
Subtext. Yes, that's exactly it.
That's amazing. I'm going to turn it to Sarah. So as I said, you are a multidisciplinary artist and a filmmaker, as well as a theater designer. So how does your experience outside the theater space affect how you interpret a script when you design a show?
Whoa.
yeah, we're just,
how does it not?
We're just starting off small for you, Sarah, you know.
I think that coming to a work, I have learned in my own lived experience and work as an artist that it's extremely important for me to approach a work as a full human being, a three-dimensional character with lived experience, with relationships in the world, with all that I am, to come that way as opposed to coming to a project like this, for instance, where I'm the set designer, instead of coming as a set designer and turning off all the other parts of my brain, it's helpful for me to, it's everything actually, for me to be present and be wholly present as a full human being who is an artist in all these different ways. So I will say that that's like the very beginning point of being part of any project. Like this play, when I read it, I met with Lisa. I told her, this is dating in 2023. This is the world that we live in right now, even
yes,
though it's set in 1905.
Exactly.
So myself, as a human young woman who's currently in the dating world, like, I also bring my experience, you know, on that level to it. And there's just, you know, it's so layered and so intricate. And it's impossible. I mean, it's been impossible for me to come to this work as anything but a full human being.
I don't want to give anything away, but like, this is such a stupid anecdote I'm about to say. Here we go. So last night I watched The Perfect Man starring Hilary Duff.
No shade.
Yeah, it was a sad girl night. Anyway, so that story is also about falsifying writing. Like, she writes to her mother as someone else, and that's kind of like not giving too much away, but it's like what you're saying about dating in 2023, like the concept of catfishing, the idea of being able to be someone else on the internet. Like, this story really, like, at its root is like how you disguise yourself as someone else to like to basically be pitching yourself as a prospect to someone and like to making yourself seem like you're better than you think you are. So I totally appreciate what you're saying about coming to it as yourself and like bringing that experience to what you build in this world. It's important.
Yeah.
I also love that we now have a recommendation for Hillary Duff.
No, I'm not saying it's a recommendation. I'm saying come see Intimate Apparel.
Yes.
You can do both. It's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
We are a vast multitudes, right? That's amazing, Sarah. Thank you. Like, can you explain a bit just the kind of logistics and mechanics of for our audience? Like, how as a designer, how do you conceptualize a set when, you know, all you have are words on a page? How do you even kind of think about that? Because I think for our audience, you know, we see it and we're like, oh yeah, that's the set. But, you know, in a lot of times the set is not given to you. It's not given to you. And so you need to create it based on the words that you read. So how do you kind of go about doing that?
Yeah, for sure. The script itself is usually a very, very great starting point because there will be indications of, oh, this person's in a bedroom, so then we need a bedroom on stage. You know, this person is in a fabric store, then we need a fabric store on stage, you know? So those things are helpful. Understanding the period is everything. Collaborating, of course, with the director is like the most important piece of designing anything, because at the end of the day, the design work is to support the director's vision and to help tell the story that they are telling, and to, you know, support it and for us to tell it together, for it to have one language, one image, one visual quality, for it to be cohesive. Mm-hmm. And that's the entire point. That's everything about with regards to like designing and creating space. And so for this play, Intimate Apparel. So like one of the first conversations we had was the configuration of the space, of like, how do we tell this intimate story in this space and have the audience basically feel and understand that they are a fly on the wall in this character's life and perspective and lived experience. So we chose the configuration that we chose to emphasize that the audience members are flies on the wall witnessing privileged information, privileged knowledge of this woman's entire life, her heartbreak, her hurt, her pain, her passion, her dreams. So that was the very starting point of, okay, this is how we want to place it for the audience to know that, you know, they cannot cross the stage like they probably would have been able to on other sets that have been done. So like the stage is sacred. It is literally a world of its own, as it is with usual, you know, theater plays. Yeah. But this one in particular, the audience it will be a violation literally for the audience to step a foot on the stage.
Yeah, I'm a stickler for that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And just because like it's so intimate, right? Like the story that they're telling, the actors giving themselves this role, Lisa directing it, is just all like levels and levels and layers and layers of intimacy, right? So
I didn't really think about it until you were mentioning the audience feeling like a fly on the wall, because it's an alley staging for those who have not yet to come see it that are listening. So there's an audience on two sides, and reading it, like, I'm just putting two and two together that all of the spaces are like very private. Like, even Mr. Marx is like, you imagine that his fabric shop is just like in like four stories up in like a tiny little apartment, right? Like, it's not like it's like this big walk off the street kind of like
it's
thing.
His bedroom.
Like, it's like not, so everywhere you go is like a very private space. There's no like coffee shop or like park or something that would exist in public space where there would be other people.
I mean, it's literally every space you go is a bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's just like a quiet, intimate moments for every step of the play.
Intimate and very private.
And you sort of already touched on this, both Sarah and Marta, but as we said, we have an alley set up for this, or a traverse stage, right? So a lot of our audience may have seen a show in our Springer Theater that is a traditional proscenium where you have the audience and then you have the stage, and there's sort of this invisible wall in between, and it's almost more of a presentation really than like a, I mean, every show is a conversation, but compared to different stagings. But I guess for both of you, Lisa or Sarah, like, you know, what made the alley versus in the round or a different kind of staging the appropriate staging for Intimate Apparel? And for Sarah, like, how do you, both of you, when you're staging or when you're creating the stage, like, to keep that in mind so that sight lines and, you know, the audience is still a part of all of that?
I mean, practically speaking, in the round wouldn't work because you have 1, 2, 3, 4 different bedrooms to go to.
Right.
So there's just the practical aspect of that. I really wasn't interested in doing a proscenium stage, which is like, the audience is over here, and the stage is over here, and there's this, like, little invisible fourth wall in between us. Because that feels really... is appropriate for other shows, but feels really distancing. And this is supposed to be about intimacy. And I wanted the audience to feel that intimacy. It's not just between the actors that the intimacy takes place. There's also the dialogue and exchange that's happening between the audience and the action happening stage.
That's so great.
And the alley configuration also allows folks to see how other people are responding.
Yes, that's what I was
going
to say. That's my favorite thing about alley staging is that you're literally not only you're watching through the play to the rest of the audience.
How is that? Yeah. How does our play impact the rest of the world? How does our play impact those very specific people in those specific seats? And the show is drastically different depending on where you're sitting in the house is the other thing.
Okay, so see it multiple times is what you're saying.
Yes, come back.
Yes, of course.
Many times.
Different seating.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, and with regards to sight lines, I mean, of course. Priority.
We've talked a lot about sight
we've
lines.
We've had a whole lot of conversations about sight lines,
I mean,
and it's ongoing.
Important thing, right? Because you do all this work, and you want people to see it.
Yeah.
You know? 100%. Yeah. And it's ongoing, because there's a level on stage. So then, you know, there's just, you know, navigating that. And Lisa's really good about, like, you know, when she's blocking, she's all over the rehearsal hall just looking for, like, oh, okay, I need you to scooch to the left a little bit, you know? Like, just making sure, like, tracking all those, you know, sight lines. They're extremely important. And, you know, even in choices of, like, props that we're using, the headboard of the bed has been a big conversation.
Right.
Of, like, wait, will this will this be in the way? Like, you know, trying to figure out and make those... decisions that from the outside you'll be like, wait, it's a headboard, but no, it's very important. It has to be just the right height, it has to be just the right width, you know, it has to be just right so it does not, you know, obstruct, you know, the view or cause sightline issues. So like, it's an ongoing conversation for sure until opening, just trying to navigate the different prop pieces that we're bringing, different set pieces, and how those things help and with sight lines.
Yeah, well, as we were just saying earlier, like, it's not a lot of, well, the storytelling is not in the dialogue. So, like, people have to be able to see facial expression. They have to be able to see moments. They have to be able to see tension between the characters from any seat you're in. What a challenge, guys.
But it's also about the reality of any story. There are many, many different perspectives. That's also what the alley seating provides.
Totally.
So, like, yes, you could sit, I'm pointing to, like, downstage left, like, at the front. There is no front of the stage on this in this instance, but you could sit on one side of the audience and get one experience, and then go to the other side of the audience and have a completely different experience in the show, depending on which character's
perspective.
Yeah,
you like see Mr. Marks in one, and then you see Esther in the other. Oh, fun!
I'm gonna have to see this a bunch of times.
Bring friends too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, definitely. So Lisa, so I've read your director's note, not to give anything too much away. It's a great director's note, by the way.
Oh, thank you!
But you said in that note, but also in general, that you're deeply vested in celebrating stories like Esther's and sharing them with the theater going public. So, you know, for our audience is from Eastern Ontario, it's a very predominantly white, older audience. And for you as a Black woman, being able to work with this amazing story and share it with an audience that may have never put themselves in Esther's shoes. What is that like? And is it something, do you think about, I mean, I think, I feel like we've already talked about it, but like thinking about the audience when you're creating these stories and who you're talking to as well. Not just the story you're telling, but who it's telling to.
I mean, lots of feelings about this. I think about this every day. I turned down this contract. I was like, oh, I don't want to be a quote-unquote Black director who only does Black work. We would never ask that question to a white artist. There's the reality of that as well. But for me, I'm really, I mean, as I said in my director's note, I'm like, I think sometimes coming from Toronto, we can get a little bit on our high horse. about like what's happening across Canada and what's happening even in our province. Yeah. And I mean, I'm the mother of two biracial children, one of whom is really presents as Black because he has got locks in his hair. And I want him to be able to live wherever he wants to live. And I want my daughter to be able to live wherever she wants to live. And for them to be able to do that, everyone in the province and in the country has to have been exposed to these stories and to our community.
Absolutely.
And what a beautiful way to do it is through the theater and through storytelling. And so I humbled myself / had a really good cry.
Yeah.
And was like, you know what? This is actually really important. It's actually a really important story to not keep in big cities, but to share with members of all communities.
Totally.
Including us smaller communities that don't yet have as many people of color.
Exactly.
Because, you know, like anyone, who wouldn't want to live in this beautiful part of the province country. And part yep. of the country, close to the yep. water? It's so good and healing for the spirit and the soul. And so we should also have that choice. And by that exposure and that learning, that's how we create relationships.
Yeah.
That's how we create community. That's how we become inclusive. Mm-hmm. That's how we have spaces where everyone feels like they belong.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's taking steps, I think, too, where from a predominantly white theater with a white background and a white history, that we have the opportunity to tell a story like this in the Fire Hall. That is a Black story told by Black artists, mm-hmm. but then maybe that becomes the norm and then it becomes part of our regular season and it becomes yeah. part of every season. And it's not just Black stories told by Black artists. It's just stories told by artists.
I mean, we're still at a place where I had a member of the community, a new member of the community, new Black member of the community say, "Where do I go to see work for us?"
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's why I'm here. Very proudly. <Yeah. laughs> That's why I'm here. Come see Intimate Apparel.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
It was really...
That's amazing.
Really lovely
yeah.
to be able to say that.
Awesome. Definitely.
To this human.
Yeah. For sure.
Great. And so, Sarah, similar question. You know, you're originally from Nigeria, and you've spoken about your interest in amplifying the stories of marginalized people and immigrants. And I know we kind of touched this because we talked about how you come to every design and every show as a human, as a fully fledged human. But how has the experience been working on this production, you know, from that perspective, right? Like you said, that even though it's set in 1905, it's like today, like the world hasn't changed. The world is very similar.
Whoa. Again. Good question. Yeah.
I'm throwing them right at you guys.
Yeah, I know. I'm catching them. I'm catching them. I am an immigrant. I am a Nigerian immigrant to Canada. And even though I'm an immigrant, I deserve to be here just as everybody else does.
Yeah.
And I can't help in this moment but think of parallels between myself and a character in the play, George. And because he's an immigrant and he came here in a dream. And those are very real. Another part of this, again, to the dating in 2023
vibe. Yes, Maya is nodding along.
As a Nigerian person who is on dating apps and talking to people, there's that factor. There are, like, real-life stories of... Not to give anything away, but there are real-life stories of people, women, men, humans, choosing to get married to someone from, a country of origin, whether it's in Africa or the Caribbean or Asia, wherever, as an immigrant yourself, trying to do that and help them get their own papers and blah, blah, blah. And it just goes sour.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, those are very, very real experiences. Mm-hmm. We can talk for days about them. And that's a very, very real part of my scope lens.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My lens in looking at this too. The fact that like humans sometimes Oof. How do I phrase words?
No, you're good.
Just see an opportunity and are like, oh, I have to take this. And you know, unfortunately, it goes to the detriment of another human being who's trying to be hopeful and looking for love or looking for this or looking for that. So this, when I say it's a real story, I really mean it. Like, as even from the lens of being an immigrant, which is mostly where it resonates with me and most people in my community who are based here or who have immigrated for whatever the reason is. And I always say immigration is trading a set of problems for a new set of problems. Mm-hmm. a reality is that in the dating world or relationship world, the pressure from society, family, all that is, sometimes that gets to people to the point that they make choices like Esther did in the play.
Yeah. Totally.
And regret it.
And the choice that George makes too. Like, I think there is such complexity in both characters. Like, I don't want to give too much away. I feel like we want to talk about the play, but we don't want to like share kind too much because it has such an interesting, like, the story and evolves in such an interesting way that we don't want to like spoil that for you as you're on your way, as we assume you are. But yeah, each character does have such a complexity, and it is so much about like getting down to the sort of like what feels like a desperation where you're like, I have to do this to a means to an end to make this happen for me.
Then the other person on the other end of that is like is left when one person does something like that to someone else, and the other person is like, well, I just got used, you know, and then there's this jadedness and blah 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 that comes with like being in a position like that. But this is like real life. It still very much happens.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
well, and everyone, like, I mean, like with Mr. Marks, with Mamie, like with all of them, like there is just so much like weight that they carry that they have to sort of like hold back or push forward in certain ways.
Yeah. Like the complexity of like human relationship, whether, you know,
if you haven't figured out already, this, as we stated before, is a very good play.
I'm telling you, it's amazing. And it's about the human experience from a whole new perspective. Yeah. And it's,
come see it multiple times and sit in different places every time we can see it. That's good to know. Okay, so as we talked about, you know, this play being produced here in Gananoque, I know that you've been working very hard the last like week and a half. Mm-hmm. Yeah, week and a half at this point. Wild how time flies, eh? Have you had a chance to explore Gananoque? Have you been anywhere that you kind of would be like, you know, this is a great place that if people are coming to see the show, they should check out, whether it's a restaurant or the waterfront or anything like that? We always like to do a little shout out to places in Gan.
Oh, yes. I have some places. This morning I had the most delicious freshly baked scone.
Ooh.
From the Painted Turtle Cafe. It was amazing. I also had an oat milk cortado there. Also amazing. And I'm picky.
Well,
so,
there you
I'm
go.
Just saying. It, and I had a ginger snap cookie from there. Like, I had three things. Clearly, I was hungry this morning.
Yes.
But it was all delicious and good. Great. And my kids have requested to go back to the Beggar's Banquet bookstore.
Yeah.
The selection of books
is
amazing!
Their kids and young adult section, especially, like,
so good.
Yeah, it's like a playground of books. It's amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I think for me, I'll say the water.
That's the best part.
Because, I mean, I actually live really close to the water.
Yeah.
So I, on my walk every day, I get to just like, look at the water.
Yeah, enjoy it.
I haven't had the time yet to actually go, but
we'll get there.
I'll get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, during Tech Week, you'll need a break.
Yeah, you'll absolutely have time, right?
Yeah, during Tech Week.
You get dinner breaks, right? Yeah. Just jump in then. Yeah, well, awesome. Thank you both so much for coming to speak to us about this, as we said, amazing play, this amazing production, and thank you for taking the time out of your very busy rehearsal schedule to come and speak with us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Of course.
This was conversation.
Amazing. Yes, definitely. So fun to talk about this play. As always, we want to express our thanks to Mark Hunt for composing the Playhouse podcast music.
This podcast is sponsored and produced by MyFM, Gananoque. Many thanks to Carrie and the MyFM team for all their help.
For more ticket information for intimate apparel, please visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com. See you at the theater.
Bye.
See you soon.